Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, creation. Chapter 1, question by the sages. We're on text number 3 again. So we chant the verse again, same verse? Okay, thank you.
Nigama kalpa taror galitam phalam sukha mukhad amrita driva samyutam pibata bhagavatam rasam alayam mahur ahu rasika bhuvi bhavukaha.
Translation again. O expert and thoughtful men, rally Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Sukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful. Although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. So I'll read the last three paragraphs. Sir left off on a very short paragraph. I'll just repeat that just to kind of get continuation. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are narrated, and the narration is systematically depicted by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Thus, the subject matter is appealing to all classes of persons, including those who seek liberation, to relish the mallow of becoming one with the Supreme Whole. In Sanskrit, the parrot is known as sukha. When a ripened fruit is cut by the red beaks of such birds, its sweet flavor is enhanced. The Vedic fruit, which is mature and ripe in knowledge, is spoken through the lips of Srila Sukadeva Goswami, who is compared to the parrot, not for his ability to recite the Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from his learned father, but for the ability to present the work in a manner that would appeal to all classes of men. The subject matter is so presented through the lips of Srila Sukadeva Goswami that any sincere listener that hears submissively can at once relish transcendental tastes, which are distinct from the perverted tastes of the mature world. The ripened fruit is not dropped all of a sudden from the highest planet of Krishna Loka. Rather, it has come down carefully through the chain of disciplic succession without change or disturbance. Foolish people who are not in the transcendental disciplic succession commit great blunders by trying to understand the highest transcendental rasa, known as the rasa dance, without following in the footsteps of Sukadeva Goswami, who presents this fruit very carefully by stages of transcendental realization. One should be intelligent enough to know the position of Srimad Bhagavatam by considering personalities like Sukadeva Goswami, who deals with the subject so carefully. This process of disciplic succession of the Bhagavata school suggests that in the future also, for all time, Srimad Bhagavatam has to be understood from a person who is factually a representative of Srila Sukadeva Goswami. A professional man who makes a business out of reciting the Bhagavatam illegally is certainly not a representative of Sukadeva Goswami. Such a man's business is only to earn his livelihood. Therefore, one should refrain from hearing the lectures of such professional men. Such men usually go to the most confidential part of the literature without undergoing the gradual process of understanding this grave subject. They usually plunge into the subject matter of the rasa dance, which is misunderstood by the foolish class of men. Some of them take this to be immoral, while others try to cover it up by their own stupid interpretations. They have no desire to follow in the footsteps of Sridhar Sukadev Goswami. One should conclude, therefore, that the serious student of the rasa dance should receive the message of Bhagavatam in the chain of disciplic succession from Srila Sukadeva Goswami, who describes the Bhagavatam from its very beginning and not whimsically to satisfy the mundaner who has very little knowledge in transcendental science. Srimad Bhagavatam is so carefully presented that a sincere and serious person can at once enjoy the ripened fruit of Vedic knowledge simply by drinking the nectarian juice through the mouth of Sukadeva Goswami or his bona fide representative. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Om Agyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Sabakaya Chakshusvani Tamin Tasmai Sri Guru Vema Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sabitanya Bhutale Swayam Upadamaya Didakta Swami. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Madhava Shri Rasai Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakopa Chubhischa Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitina Pagani Puru Vaishnavi. O expert and thoughtful man, rally Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. You'd be surprised how many times Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse, you know, or even parts of this verse all throughout his teachings and lectures and instructions, even his letters. It's just so important how it is for us to relish this and what it takes to relish it. So since we went to the end of the purport, we should go through the whole purport. No, I'm just kidding. It's quite long, so we had to divide up into three classes. But we know the first sloka in this particular Srimad Bhagavatam is how the Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, all the Vedic literatures. It's like the essence, the cream. And in the second verse, it talks about that this Bhagavatam has nothing to do with material illusion, nothing to do with this material world, or any kind. It's not even religion. It has nothing to do with religion. And now we're in this third verse. It's talking about it, and it's confirming that it is the ripened, the topmost, the essence, you know, the tasty, sweet juice of the Vedic literatures. So it's here. This is what we need to relish. So this is a tree. It's a ripened tree. They say you could judge a tree by its fruit, right? So here in the mature world, you go outside, you see it. Especially when I was traveling in Mauritius, you see all these trees. And you see all the fruits. There's a citrus tree with some... what is that fruit? Big grapefruit. I was thinking of grapefruit. You see this huge snake. What is that? It's a grapefruit tree. There's a mango tree. There's a, you know, all kinds of guava trees. There's so many different trees. You see them by their fruit. But this is like a kalpa vriksha tree. And anything you want, you have to get through the Vedic literatures. If you want anything, any perfection in any science, in any knowledge, even if it's material, you have to get it through the Vedic literatures. If you want to learn this military science, you have to go to the Dhanurvedas. If you want to learn the healing science, you have to go to the Ayurveda. And so many different Vedas for this and for that. But here, this is the highest thing. It's the cream of all knowledge. So we should take advantage of it. It's very nice. And you can get anything from this thing. And here it's being brought out very nicely how it's a ripened fruit. It's not, you know, just thrown down from the top of the tree and it's smashed and it's bruised and it's messed up. But it's very carefully handed down through disciplic succession. So this is important for us to realize that this tree, this fruit is already ripened. I mean, nowadays, they pick fruit that's not ripened, right? because it has to travel long distances. It comes from Mexico or it comes from wherever, fruits from all over the world. So they get it when it's not even ripe yet. And they artificially ripen it. That fruit doesn't taste the same. It's a complete difference. If you have a fruit that's ripened on the tree, what a taste. It's amazing. Like you see you have seen these fruits, these papayas, and you just wait, it's on the tree, you see it's like green, and it starts to turn orange, and then you see, it's just ripe. And then you begin to see, the birds, you can see they're already pecking on it, so you know it's ripe. So now it's like so good. What a difference. So this is the ripened fruit. Not only is it ripe now, but Sukadev Goswami is like the parrot and is picking on it already. And just by his picking on it, it makes it even more sweeter, even more relishable. So what nectar. And not only that, we have these ripened fruit of the Vedic literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's touched by the lips or the beak of Sukadev Goswami, and it becomes even sweeter. And now we have the Bhaktivedanta purports, which even still, like it described in the movie, how Srila Prabhupada had this ability to synthesize all these Vedic literatures and commentaries from all these great acharyas and put it together in his Bhaktivedanta purports so that we can understand and even make it more easy to digest. So, what else do we have to do? Just take advantage of this juice and just drink it. But we have to be careful also. We have to be very patient in our hearing. It's also described in this particular purports that we have to hear it with patience and a submissive attitude. When you are receiving knowledge from an authority, you don't challenge it. You don't argue. You don't say, my opinion is this, or everybody has an opinion, or this and that. No, you just humbly hear with an open mind and you accept it. And then you make advantage. But if you challenge it, you know, why is this, what's this, and that challenging spirit towards the speaker or towards the Prabhupada, you know, the books and not understanding the devotees, then it's taken away from you the understanding. You won't understand it. So we have to do this so that we can develop and taste that rasa. The rasa is the highest understanding, the highest mallow of understanding anything. I mean, it's like so powerful. Even the impersonalists is described, you know, they are attracted to this. But they're criticized because they try to think that the Lord is not a non-person, or he has a material personality. But he doesn't. How could someone, if you hear about them, you're freed from birth and death, janma karma chame divyam. If you just hear about their activities, how do you become free from birth and death? Is that a material activity? No, this is the Supreme Lord. So even Lord Chaitanya, who renounced everything of this material world, was totally absorbed in discussing the pastimes of Krishna. You think that was material? Or even we see the four Kumaras, they were impersonalists, they were attracted. Even Sukadev Goswami, he relished it. He was so attracted to it. So this is what happens, is we can relish it if we engage in the service of the Lord. This is so important, the power of devotional service. Srila Prabhupada mentioned, work now, samadhi later. So we engage in devotional service, serving Krishna with our senses, so that ultimately we'll be able to hear and taste this nectar, relish it. There's even a place where Srila Prabhupada said how, just like if you're serving, like you're cooking for Krishna, and you're thinking, I can't wait to taste this. It's so nice. Can't wait to eat. I'm so hungry. Or you could think, I'm cooking this for Krishna, and you say, I can't wait to serve this so that Krishna can enjoy it so nicely. So Prabhupada says, one, Krishna's not there. The other one, where you're actually cooking for Krishna, that's Krishna consciousness. Krishna's there. And he said, this is samadhi. What is the difficulty? Why is samadhi? It's not no difficulty. You just change your consciousness to really do and serve Krishna with your senses, with your mind. As you're serving, oh, this is for Krishna. I want to do this for the Lord. It's not for me. Like when we say Namaha, in all the prayers that we offer to the spiritual master, our teachers, and even to the Supreme Personality Godhead, we say Namaha. Na means not, Maha means me. Not me, not my desires, but your desires. Let me please you, you know, not me. So this is our mantra that we chant practically every day. So the highest section towards the end here of this purport, Prabhupada's talking about rasa. And everybody's looking for this. In the mature world, you even see they have these video games, these computer games, these games you can play on your devices, you carry with you. And after a while, people get bored with them. Like, how can you hang out with the machine? But then they try to make the machine more personal, like you can challenge somebody else, like somewhere else. And it gets more interesting because, oh, you know, it's like more personal, I'm challenging this person. So there's like a little rasa kind of there, two machines. But after a while, then they get bored because it's like, it's just a machine. We want to get some real taste. We want to hang out with real people. You know, like you see your friend, you haven't seen him for a long time. You know, you hug each other, you know, you laugh, you pat each other on the back, you know, jokes, you know, things like that. You're laughing. This is rasa. You want to experience some taste. This is the soul. It's looking for this mellow, this flavor. And yet, even in the mature world, the highest, you know, relationship we experience is between a man and a woman. There's so many intricacies. There's so many, you know, mellows and different flavors. And, you know, you go from one extreme to the other. It's so many different things. But yet, still it's frustrating, isn't it? Still there's some thing that doesn't satisfy. Because guess what? These bodies are actually a machine. We're trying to hang out with these machines. How can you squeeze real rasa out of a machine? So that's what the body is. It's actually a machine. So you see, that's why more and more they're trying to make these persons, I mean these computers, more like personal, like you're hanging out with the person, because they know that's where the flavor is, that's where the rasa is. So these mature bodies, they won't satisfy. But yet we're still hankering for a real personal relationship. We want a heart-to-heart relationship. And what is that? That's with the individual soul with Krishna. It's so amazing. And this is what all Srimad Bhagavatam is about. As we read throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, we're going to understand how the Supreme Lord had relationships, rasas, with his devotees. Just think, you know, Prachina Barhi, how he got enlightened. We look at Dhruva Maharaj, how the Lord personally came and helped him. Even later on, when he became illusioned, the Lord helped him. The Lord is personal. We'll read about Prahlad Maharaj, how he had such a wonderful relationship with Lord Nrsimhadev. Even Gajendra, he didn't even remember his previous birth, but he remembered a verse. And just by reciting that verse in an animal body, the Supreme Lord came and appeared and liberated him. This is the power of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The power of these mantras, that they're not material, they're actually spiritual. So Krishna is showing how sublime his relationship is with his devotees. And if you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's so many instances. And if you read the Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a story, I think it was with Srivas and Devananda Pandit, when he was relishing Srimad Bhagavatam and he was experiencing ecstasy, you know, because he was such a pure devotee. And then the other people that were there were not so much devotees, so they kicked him out. They thought he was like having some kind of, maybe he's kooky, so they threw him out. And then he was just like, they're depressed, And then Lord Chaitanya later was coming to them and saying, hey, do you remember when you were depressed there? And because, you know, they threw you out, they misunderstood. I actually appeared in your heart. And you began to experience ecstasy, and your tears are flowing from your eyes so much, you know, that people thought it was raining, and you were rolling on the ground. And then there's different devotees there, and Lord Chaitanya was reminding them about different instances. Do you remember this? When you were like, your boat crashed or something, or somehow it was in the river, one of the boats came down and you didn't have any way of surviving it, and then I appeared as a boatman in the boat and I helped you. And then so many stories like this, and the devotees would remember. They're like, wow, that was you. Krishna appeared. Krishna's appearing. And he's still doing that to his devotees. It's a very personal relationship. So we have to relish Srimad Bhagavatam. And we have to understand, you know, how Krishna says to the devotees in the Chaitanya Bhagavatam, I actually left Vaikuntha and I appeared in your body just to help you and have a relationship with you, have some kind of pastime with you. This is what happened. So it's important for us to understand how it mentions here. We shouldn't try to imitate or try to misinterpret like the Mayavadis, or try to immediately go to the most confidential parts of the Vedic literatures, but to gradually become purified. It's not that we imitate, but we have to assist Lord Chaitanya. The associates of Lord Chaitanya, they didn't imitate him. They actually assisted him, helping him in his taste, helping bring conditioned souls to him. They were actually serving Lord Chaitanya Krishna's pastimes by surrendering to his Sankirtan movement. This is so important. So we can see, looking at the Srimad Bhagavatam and see the example of these sages, how does it relate to us? How can we hear and chant? It's mostly about hearing and chanting in the beginning. How can we properly hear and chant? You can see how our life here, what we're doing, we're hearing and chanting. They have the assembly of the sages, the Naimasharanya. You know, we're here assembled in New Dwarka. So how is it similar and how is it different to the sages at that time? So there's one thing, because they're sitting on the seat there. Sukadeva Goswami sitting on the seat, Suta Goswami sitting on the seat. And if this seat represents knowledge. And we know knowledge is a very powerful thing. In fact, it's prohibited, it's described. You know, one time I was distributing books in the Denver airport, and I don't know if you know, anybody remembers, there was this actor called Billy Jack. You remember that? I don't know if you remember. Anyway, we used to watch him when we were kids. But he was like, it was like one of the first movies where they start, some guy would come out and he would protect people when people weren't, you know, they'd see a fight and nobody would do anything. So he would come and break up the fight, and he would, you know, he knew some techniques on martial arts and stuff. And he knew some ancient Indian philosophies and things, and he was kind of, you know, an elevated person, representative character. And I met him at the airport, actually. And I was trying to present him a book. And he said, I guess he understood maybe a little bit about Vedic knowledge or something. And he said, you shouldn't be distributing this knowledge to the common people. That's why. He goes, because people aren't, you know, it's not proper or something. So we had to little discussion, but I don't think he really understood what we're doing. So it's actually kind of true. I mean, you know, there's some knowledge in the Vedic literatures that is confidential. You can't just immediately blurt it out. And that's what Sukadeva Goswami, you know, he didn't, even amongst all the sages there assembled, he didn't just talk about all the confidential pastimes immediately with Krishna, because there was impersonalists in there. There was different qualities, you know, different levels of people's realization. So he spoke in such a way, as it mentioned here, that everybody could relish it and take advantage of it. So, you know, people with knowledge have power. There was a funny story, one devotee was giving a class, he was talking about how, you know, he was using this example, how knowledge is very powerful. And he said, even when he was a kid, he understood this, how people can exploit you if they have knowledge. So his sister knew how to make brownies. And she used that to exploit her brothers and make them do stuff, because she knew how to make brownies and she won't give you any if you don't do what I say. Similarly, we see a mechanic. You take your car to a mechanic. If you're in ignorance about your car, then they can immediately use that knowledge to cheat you and exploit you. And even in the past, doctors used to take a vow or an oath that whatever I'm practicing is for your benefit of your health. But nowadays, they don't take that oath anymore. Even financial advisors, you go to get financial guidance. They don't have to invest your money to actually benefit you. And that's what they call their fiduciary, I think is what it's called, isn't it? Where they actually, their oath is that they are into your best interest only. So that's where you have to find someone like that. So this knowledge is very powerful. So the sages, they gather together to hear this knowledge for the benefit of everybody. Not for just themselves and not for exploiting people. Because we know what happened when the brahmanas, we have this story right in the Bhagavatam, when Maharaj Pariksit was cursed by this brahmana boy, Sringi. He was very puffed up and he used his brahminical power, his brahminical knowledge to curse the king. And when his father found that out, he was so disappointed, because this is the entrance point where all evil is coming in to this age of Kali. It practically destroyed, this one little Brahmana boy destroyed the whole Brahminical culture practically, just from one misuse of that power, immature use. So this is very important. We may think, oh, Suta Goswami, we're going to hear, how qualified one has to be to sit on this Vyasasana. I mean, Suta Goswami is on the seat of knowledge. And we ourselves, we have to be sitting on the seat of knowledge, the Vyasasana. So what's the qualification necessary to sit up here? I mean, you have to have good character. I can't say that I have good character. You have to have knowledge. I can't say I have full knowledge. You see, like Haridas Thakur, he was glorified. Why? For what? Two reasons. Because he behaved properly and he also preached. Some people preach and don't behave properly. Some behave properly but don't preach. But Haridas Thakur was glorified because he did both. And we'll see in text number 6 that it says, in order to sit on the Vyasasana, you have to be free from all four vices before you even dare to sit on the Vyasasana. So what is our qualification? I mean, you can admit how I'm trying to get free from these four vices. We're all trying. We're in the hospital. But we're encouraged by Srila Prabhupada to share our realizations with others. Even though there's such a high qualification to be sitting on a seat to give knowledge, even to go out on Sankirtan, there's such a high qualification to be able to represent your spiritual master. So what is that high qualification? There's a nice story in the Mahabharata. I don't know if you've heard this story. It's the swan and the crow. I'll just kind of give you a gist of it. There's this crow that was favored by this rich family, and the children give it all this very nice food. And the crow was beginning to, feel, nice. And they were respecting treating the crow nicely. And then the crow started to get a little puffed up. And even encouraged by the kids, when some swans are flying by, and there's like, wow, here comes the swans. Such beautiful birds, And so the little boys said, oh, you're as good as the swan. You could do so many things, So the crow started to get a little puffed up and said, yeah, I can fly like this. I could go this way, that way. The crows, the swans, they just fly straight. And just go here. can't do all this. So he began to challenge them and say, you know, let's have a race. Let's see who's better. So the swan said, oh, okay. You know, so he began to take off, you know, do all kinds of cool moves and circles and twists and real fancy flying. And so they had to fly over the ocean. They're flying. So the swans are just, you know, gliding very nicely. You know, the crows are doing all kinds of fancy stuff. And then all of a sudden, the swans just say, okay, let's speed up. I mean, the swans can fly great distances at great speed, actually. So they started to take off and just left that crow in there, like, and then after he became tired, and then he realized, I'm too tired. I can't fly anymore. I mean, the ocean's here. I'm falling, you know, falling. He said, wait, stop, help, help. You know? So the swans, they actually came back and helped him take out of the water. So we see a lesson from there. There's two things. There's either anukara or anusara. Anukara, do you know what that means? Exactly. And anusara? Following footsteps. So yeah, here we have the crows. They're anukara. They're just imitating. They're in no position. Instead of following the swans, they were, you know, imitating them. So this is what we have to be careful of, not to imitate. But how do we overcome our faults? How do we overcome our pride? There's a very nice paragraph I'd just like to read to you. It kind of talks about this. After becoming uplifted by receiving the mercy of great personalities, some kakajana, which is a crow-like person, he becomes proud and forgets the color of their feathers. After having a little association of swan-like personalities or Paramahamsa devotees, they began to consider themselves far superior to their peers and perhaps even equal to the Paramahamsas. Instead of anusara, following the instructions of the dear devotees, they take up the cheap practice of anukara, imitation. By taking shelter of the swan-like persons, we may cross the ocean of birth and death. But if trying to imitate them, we will certainly fall down into the ocean and drown. We see even some examples here, even in the Krishna consciousness movement. They tried to imitate the swan-like paramahamsas. What happened? So this is very, we have to be very careful. We have to be representatives of our spiritual master and just repeat what we've heard. And that's all I'm doing. Just come and just repeat what you've heard from the spiritual master. Nothing originates with us. Nothing originated with me. Actually, this Srimad Bhagavatam actually comes from the spiritual world. It descended from the spiritual world. This knowledge has been given to us. So it just behooves us just to repeat this knowledge as we heard it without being fancy, you know, giving a real fancy, you know, presentation or trying to go to the most confidential, you know, pastimes of Krishna. But we just have to share our realizations and experiences with Krishna as we go. That's anusara. So this is the knowledge, it's the mature fruit of all the Vedic literatures. And it's been handled very carefully. So in the same way that Sukadeva Goswami, he knew that most people wouldn't appreciate this knowledge. So, you know, also the hearer is another important factor in receiving this knowledge. So it's not only the speaker, but the hearer, as described here, he shouldn't be in a challenging mood. He should actually advance and purify himself so that he can become qualified. And this is the whole purpose of reading the Srimad Bhagavatam from the first canto. We're developing the foundation of this, of our spiritual life. Just like we in the BBT office, we had there, Savasa's office got, you know, some damage, water damage on the floor. It's not that Savasa's saying, okay, let's just cover it up, let's put a carpet down. Just cover it up, or just put a new tile right over it. Or like, if you want to go paint the wall and the walls are all dirty and you just go paint the walls, it's just covered up. What happens, eventually it's just going to peel off. Or like the floor, if we just put something on the floor, it's wet underneath and it starts to warp and so many things. You have to actually rip it all out. Rip out the old floor that's all warped and messed up. And then what do? You start to rebuild it. build the foundation nicely. And that's what we're doing in Srimad Bhagavatam, is we're ripping out all these anartas, all these things, these false egos, these knots in the mature world, so that we can actually open up and have an open mind to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam and relish it. And then we'll be able to taste this mallow of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, if there's any comments or questions, I would open up. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhupada describes that Buddhist philosophy is false because he gives the example, if you have a dead body, if you have all the components right there and all the ingredients, you can't make that body come back to life. He said, so the material body is not a machine, because just like a machine, you can replace a part and it works, but with the body, you can't. So it seems like he contradicted what you said. You said the body is a machine, Prabhupada said that it's not a machine.
Because? What's the reason?
Because you can't replace a part of the body, a dead body, and make it work again.
You can't replace a part of the dead body and make it work again.
You can't bring it back to life by replacing an organ or a different part.
Yeah, that's proof that it is a machine.
No, and he says that it's not a machine. Because with the machine, you can replace a part and the machine can work again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but... Because why? The person that's running the machine replaces it. So in the same way, the soul in the machine is what makes it work. You see, so it's kind of a little play with words, getting confused. But it's the same thing, right, Archita? Yeah. Yeah. Yes, can you... Yeah, any other comments? Yes.
Russ, you were mentioning that even the impersonalists are attracted by the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'm just wondering, in which way they are attracted by the Srimad Bhagavatam? Can you please describe a little bit detail?
Can you repeat your question?
So you were mentioning that... even the impersonalists, they are attracted by the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering, in which way the impersonalists are attracted by the Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yeah, I mentioned too, there was the four Kumaras, how they were impersonalists, but when they smelled the lotus feet of Krishna and the Tulsi buds, they became very attracted to personal form. And then Sukadeva Goswami himself, in the womb, he was an impersonalist, fully realized. But then when he heard Srimad Bhagavatam, then he was attracted to the personal activities of Krishna. And those are two examples. But I'm sure there's many more.
Thank you.
So, yes, Prabhu.
I've heard the first three verses of Bhagavatam are especially significant. Can you explain why?
Oh, I kind of mentioned that how... You know, the first part shows that it's the essence of all Vedic literatures, and how the second verse said it's nothing to do with the mature world, and now how it's the ripened fruit of everything. It's like that it's showing us what we have in our hand. This is such a great thing. And then I think in the fourth verse it starts, even in the purport, the prophet talks about the prelude, that's the first few verses, and then now it gets right into some of the substance. That's kind of how what I heard. Maybe, okay, yeah. You want to let Brigupati try first, and then you could give your answer.
Clarify, I think Garanga Prema's question was not which impersonalists are attracted to the Srimad Bhagavatam, but in which way are impersonalists attracted to the Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the attraction of Srimad Bhagavatam to the impersonalists? That was his question. You gave
Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
Well, so
what's the attraction? What attraction does Srimad Bhagavatam hold for impersonalists? because he was saying that in the beginning of your class, you mentioned that even some impersonalists were there when Sukadeva was on. And that's the reason why he kept it a bit confidential in the beginning. So his question is, in what way are impersonalists attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam?
Well, the Sukadeva Goswami is the example. What way? He heard it just by hearing. All you have to do is hear it. Not only from pure devotees. It's so important. But if you hear from pure devotees, then it has effect.
So how are they impersonalists? How are they impersonalists if they're desiring to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and appreciate the pastimes of the Lord? How are they?
Well, they're not impersonalists anymore.
Okay.
They were. So, I think Archidai's hand up next.
The entire Vedic presentation is attractive, even to materialists. Like you said, there are so many branches, but the potential is always there to misuse it. Just like Prabhupada would harp on the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is attractive, even to the politicians, but they misuse it because they don't really believe in Krishna. They don't really want to present Krishna's message. They want to use it for their own self-aggrandizement. So the literature itself is attractive, just like the Germans. They were attracted to the Dhanurveda. They wanted to make the nuclear weapon that was mentioned there. So everybody's attracted to some aspect of the Vedas, including the Bhagavatam. But the problem is, if you're not a devotee of the Lord, then you're going to misuse it. So the impersonalists, they're attractive. The language of the Vedas is attractive. We hear, even right here in LA, we have so many impersonalist groups. They love to chant. They chant, even Hare Krishna, they chant. But they're not doing it for the right reason. They're doing it for their own aggrandizement, to present themselves as being great yogis or whatever. So it's attractive. You can't deny that. The Vedic literature is attractive. And some people get so upset, like in the yoga circles, so now they want to take religion out of yoga, because it's Eastern religion, it's not Christian religion. So many Christians are attracted to yoga, but it's full of Vedic references to Vishnu and, you know, different names of the Lord. And they want to take that out. They want to practice yoga, but they don't want to have the connection to Vishnu. So this is what happens. If you're not a devotee, you may be attracted to the Vedas as a whole or to some portion of it, but you want to take Krishna out of it. So that when you have, what do you have left? You don't have anything left. If you take Krishna out of the Vedas, Krishna says, by all the Vedas I have to be known. So if you take Krishna out of the Vedas, then what do you have left? You don't have anything left.
Yeah, it's true. I think, did you want to say something? Okay. All right. Did you want to finish? Okay. Bring the mic over here, Prabhu.
In the purport to the first verse of the Bhagavatam, it says that it starts with the Gayatri Mantra. So, but I don't see the Gayatri Mantra in the verse.
I was reading that it actually starts, the Bhagavatam starts from Om, and then from the Gayatri Mantra, and then it goes from there to, I forget what was after that. Then it goes right into Bhagavatam. Sometimes. Or the Vedas. Actually goes into the Vedas. Yeah, and then it's the invitation of Bhagavatam. Yes, it's.
But there's no Gayatri Mantra in the first verse. This is in the purport that.
Well, you're not going to see it. Just like you don't see Om. I mean, it's just telling you, this is like before that, like we're talking about the beginning, how it evolves. So what you have here is not going to show everything, how it began. You know, just understand that this came. It's like you don't see Krishna speaking it, you don't see Vyasadeva, you know, reciting it. But it's here. But Krishna is actually here. It's not different than Krishna. Like that. What was your first question? You had an answer that they were trying to question?
I thought you that you answered it.
Okay.
Thank you.
There's a really nice, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'll share with you, there's Prabhupada translate the same verse in a different way, which is really nice. I'll read it to you. This is how Prabhupada translates it in Madhya Lila 25.151. He said, Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedic literatures, and it is considered to the ripened fruit of the wish-fulfilling tree of Vedic knowledge. It has been sweetened by emanating from the mouth of Srila Sukadeva Goswami. You who are thoughtful and who relish mallows should always try to taste this ripened fruit. O thoughtful devotees, as long as you're not absorbed in transcendental bliss, you should continue tasting the Srimad Bhagavatam. And when you're fully absorbed in bliss, you should go on tasting its mallows forever. So that's a nice translation. So this desire tree is interesting. Prabhupada said the desire tree, you could get anything from it in the spiritual world. Like here, we have trees that just give you mangoes or some other kind of fruit. But in the spiritual world, the desire trees, they'll give you, Prabhupada says, samosas, puris, halva, or any kind of thing you want. So that's a kind of fruit shop. Okay. Thank you for your kind attention. I'll go to Srimad Bhagavatam.
Pada kemana?